This is America Weekend. I am Paul Harris. As the son of two educators myself, I never miss an opportunity to tip my hat when I hear or see the work of a great teacher, and my next guest certainly fits that category. For 35 years, he has been teaching gifted students at a public school in Charlottesville, Virginia, and he also created something for them that is also remarkable. It's called the World Peace Game. It has turned into a book. There's a documentary about his efforts with these kids, and I've asked him to join me here today. John Hunter, welcome to America Weekend.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here with you, Paul.
Is it safe to call the World Peace Game a political science simulation for nine-year-olds?
Yes, I guess you'd say that. Although it was created in high school, we've worked it down to nine-year-olds, and they, of course, bring a lot of freshness that older students sometimes don't have.
Explain to my audience briefly how it works.
Well, it's a 4-foot by 4-foot by 4-foot plexiglass tower. There are four layers, four 4-by-4 plexiglass sheets stacked vertically one above the other to make this towering structure. And there are hundreds of game pieces on every level. It emulates our Earth, an undersea level, ground and sea level, an aircraft level, an outer space level. And I divide the kids into country teams and cabinets, the UN and arms dealers, World Bank, and ask them to solve the 50 interlocking complex world problems we have today without combat if possible. And they do and have for decades.
Without combat if possible, but sometimes they do invade each other, don't they?
Yes, they do. They're allowed to be human. They're allowed to fail massively, and they must actually fail in order to come through and learn how to work collaboratively together. I don't preach that or teach that. They discover that in the practice of failing and learn how to succeed together.
When you present these crises to your students, and you've been doing it for more than three decades now, can you tell ahead of time, okay, I have a pretty good idea how this is going to go?
Never, and never. I wish I could, but every thing I hold on to and every presupposition I have, they shatter it immediately. And, of course, they go off and do things in a much more creative way than I ever could have imagined. Even on the verge of defeat, they're able to snatch victory from that and make a whole new way of success for us in the world.
There's a wonderful story that you told in a TED Talk of yours that I watched about the impact of the war portion of the game on the kids, because you actually make them write letters to the families of the fictional dead soldiers, right?
That's right. They're responsible, and they have to be responsible for those under their command. And so they don't take this going to war lightly or as in play, as we often see children do, and some adults really have that cavalier attitude about that. So it's a much more serious consideration. And writing that letter is a sobering kind of yet appropriate response for children to make in that situation, where they get a deeper understanding of the consequences of their actions.
And one year you invited a parent who happened to be in the room to read that letter instead of having the child read it to the class, and that was amazing.
It was just heart-wrenching, because the parent began to read the letter, and in a simple child's language, they say, "I'm sorry your son and daughter has been killed in battle, and I'm the commander, and I'm sorry about that." And of course, she broke down in tears, you know, after a couple of sentences in, and so did I. And it was a very sobering moment. And, you know, even military personnel who've seen the film about the game and the book have written to us saying, yes, you keep playing that game, because that kind of consequence should be in our minds before we enter something so serious.
You play the game with these kids over the course of 8 weeks or so in your class. I'm curious, at the beginning, not at the beginning 35 years ago, but at the beginning each year when you do it with these nine-year-old kids, do they lean towards conflict or cooperation?
Well, you know, it's evolved over the decades, Paul. I think in the beginning, there was much more of an intent to go to war. Let's just get this done physically, militarily, as quickly as possible. And over the decades, they've become much more thoughtful and circumspect and take their time and really try and find many ways around that. Maybe a reflection of our times, but I think they're just simply smarter and wiser, and they just decide, you know, the last tool in our diplomatic toolkit is the worst one. That's war. Let's try to do something else first.
What are some of the crises you throw at them?
We have endangered species, and that's complicated with oil rights situation on the site of the microscopic endangered species that live there. So they've got to really make some decisions, some hard decisions. We've got ethnic and religious and minority troubles, hazardous waste and nuclear waste spills, much like Fukushima in Japan, breakaway republics, desertification, famine, poverty, you name it. We put it in there in a complex, interdependent way so that no one situation can be considered in isolation to others. Everything is interconnected.
Are there gender stereotypes at the beginning of a game like this? Do the boys tend to be more war?
Well, you know, I may have had some way back when we started. And it does. There does seem to be a grain of truth to it. The boys simply come in and see the structure, and they see missiles and tanks and troops, and they say, let's go to war. And the girls come in and say, oh, my gosh, we're in a lot of trouble here. But, you know, I think my best military commanders have routinely been girls. They find ways to do these kinds of military operations without much, if any, combat at all. They will take you out before you even know what has happened, whereas the boys are much more obvious about it. But they all have become much more pensive and thoughtful about these situations before they go in over the decades.
I'm going to ask you to tell one story because I think it is so telling about the sort of stuff you have these kids doing in your class. And it's the one about the girl who decided on her own to attack another country's oil fields.
That was a fantastic moment. And it broke all the conventions of the game that I had as the inventor. And I simply had to allow them to play their game. I couldn't interfere. And I didn't know what they were doing. This one girl was a Minister of Defense on a very poor country, and she'd been instructed by her prime minister not to do anything. They didn't have the funds, they didn't have the resources, and they didn't want to anger the larger oil-rich neighbor to their south. But this girl knew that something was going to happen. She knew she had to take action. Nobody would believe her. So she took it upon herself, made a philosophical decision to march her tanks and troops and planes over into that neighboring country's rich oil field and surround it without firing a shot. She locked down the resources. They could not move because she had their fuel sort of sewed up. And everybody was upset with her, and my heart was breaking. I thought, sure, she'd made a mistake. She'd gone against peace. She started a small war, but later, come to find out later, she had seen the trend lines of what was coming. She understood far more deeply than the rest of us what was about to happen, and she made a philosophical decision to start a small war to avert a larger war. And we had to stop and talk about the philosophical and moral implications of that as nine-year-olds in a group. What an astounding lesson. I couldn't have planned that. I couldn't have designed that as a teacher. But they, in their collective wisdom, were able to bring that about in the open framework of the game.
Just listening to you talking about the game and the passion you still have for it 35 years after creating it, I'm sure that that passion has been carried forward by your former students. Do they stay in touch with you so when they get into their 20s, 30s, and 40s, they call you up, hey, Mr. Hunter, I just want to tell you that I'm using those lessons in my real life?
Oh, Paul, that's one of the most beautiful things for a teacher. You know, it's a bittersweet experience for a teacher when they leave your classroom for the final time. You may never see them again. You don't know what happens to them sometimes. You wonder, and it's kind of a void in your life. So when they reach back and connect with you, it's a joy. So we do have a student at the University of North Carolina in Chapel Hill who wrote me recently, and it's a letter posted on our website. And she says, Mr. Hunter, I'm in war and peace studies now in security and international diplomacy issues, and I solve problems like nobody's business. My professors can't understand how I can do this so well. I get so excited when I deal with, you know, international issues. My fingers start tingling. But professors ask her, how could she do this so well? And she says, well, I've been doing diplomacy since I was 9 years old. You know, and she was allowed to do everything wrong. She became a black market arms dealer. She defied the UN. She broke all the rules of the game once again and found a new way for herself. And that's what the game allows, for students to find out what is the best way rather than prescribing or telling them what to do and what not to do.
Are other schools using your game, John?
Now we do have quite a few cities in the U.S. who've sent teachers to train with me. And actually we're getting quite a big call from abroad, from Asian countries, from African countries, and particularly from Europe. And I have been to Europe a number of times to start that practice. So, yes, there are games going on, and, of course, they fail massively at first. The game is designed to do that. But these brave teachers become used to working in the unknown of a child's learning, and they become comfortable with that after a while and understand that's the best way to let a child find their own way in learning.
Last question I have for you. What qualifies as a win?
Well, that's a beautiful question. We figured out that all 50 of those interlocking real-world global problems have to be solved, practically and realistically. And the second clause is that every country's asset value must have increased. In other words, everybody has to win in order for the game to be won. It's kind of different from most board games where there are winners and losers. Here, we can't stop playing, and we play for months sometimes until everybody wins in the world. And that's almost a model for us as adults to think about. How can everybody come away ahead?
It is truly remarkable. You are the kind of teacher that every parent in America wants their child to walk into a classroom and find. And I congratulate you on a remarkable career and a remarkable invention.
Paul. I've had wonderful teachers, and we all have had great teachers who made us who we are today. So we all stand on someone else's shoulders.
Yeah, well, I thank you very much for all of your work and for joining me here today. John Hunter with Paul Harris on America Weekend.